I want to talk to you now, some more, on something that you're going to hear a lot of because you're going to use a lot of. And that's processing by definition. We're continuing to talk about this. We've talked about some goals, talked about some types of processes. And I've given you some very rather loose category of what these processes are. And I've given you some idea where you're going with these goals, with these processes, toward what goals. All right, now let's get very, very, very specific. Huh? And let's talk about processing by definition in exact understanding of these definitions. When you are dealing with any subject, you have to have a command of its definitions. Nothing has astonished me more than to find some of my brethren in nuclear physics completely vacuumized on the subject of basic physics definitions. The whole science of physics is utterly dependent upon its basic definitions. And here are fellows monkeying around with piles and the government and national policy and their decision as to whether or not the Millikuries go into the right end or not will make or break the whole plan. And yet these fellows have forgotten the basic laws of heat, Boyle's law, the basic laws of electronics, Ohm's law, so on. You wouldn't think it possible that they could get that high and get that forgetful. But they do. They no longer know the science of physics. And not knowing the science of physics, they apply, therefore, advanced physics so poorly as to make hash. Now, they sit around and theorize and philosophize and monkey eyes and get paid for it, too. Because everybody supposes that they know physics. Well, they might know nuclear physics, that being a different subject, but they wouldn't ever be able to close the bridge between practical nuclear physics and any operation therein. They get out there into the abstract, and symbol to them is more real than anything else. They have done what? In their subject, they have lost their orientation point. They lose it. They get into too many significances, too many complexities, and they lose their point of orientation. What are the points of orientation of physics? Well, we're not here studying physics, but we could say they'd be the laws of fulcrum and balances, Newton's three laws of motion, the laws of gases, and the basic laws of electronics. These would fairly well cover the subject. Well, there's law of acceleration of gravity. You could actually state these laws and get somebody to comprehend these laws in a relatively short space of time, I would say a week or so. They spend a year in high school on these and get everybody involved in arithmetic. And they sort of miss the definition. They get everybody involved over here in arithmetic. How do you work the algebra or arithmetic that makes these laws turn into mathematical answers? And the fellow is continually looking back over here to find his definition. He looks it up again, you see, and then he notices that there's a formula there. So he says, well, that formula is pretty good, and he cross-references to the formula, and then he starts working it as a formula. And then he goes over, and the next thing you know, why, he's finished a year of physics, and you say to him, well, now, what are the laws relating to vectors? He'll say, vectors? What are you talking about? I didn't take any analytical geometry. You say, no, in physics, you know, what is the laws of things moving in curves? What's the acceleration of them? Blank. Well, let's get real simple. Let's just get the formula of a definition. What's the formula of fulcrums and balances? Oh, you wouldn't expect me to remember that stuff. Kid stuff. Let me assure you that the discovery of the laws of fulcrum and balances back in the days of Greece shook the whole world. They revolutionized all construction. Fantastic. But once upon a time, this was important. And it's no longer important to anybody. And they're not doing a good job either. So let's get these two coordinations. The fact that the physicist, the mathematician, loses his basic definition and goes afield, so neither thee nor me could possibly comprehend him. Although what he's dealing with is elementary. And the fact that an auditor could get so bogged down in the deep significances of formulas and so forth that he'd forget his definitions. We compare these two, or I give them to you as a comparison, merely because they are the most apt comparison with which I have been associated. You yourself would have other, better comparisons. There are other sciences and other organizations of knowledge with which you can compare Scientology, but you will find in each and every one of them, when you have forgotten the basic definitions, when you've laid them aside or didn't understand them in the first place, that the remainder of the subject had a tendency to escape you and appeared to be very difficult. All there is to that subject is its basic definitions plus your ability to extrapolate and interpret them. That's all there is to any science. What you look at normally in a textbook are the basic definitions plus some experts' extrapolation and interpretation. You could just delete all the written matter in the text, go right straight back to the definitions, look at the definitions, and make up your mind whether or not they're true for you, assemble the component parts of the subject as far as you were concerned, interpret them for yourself, apply them to existence, and you would be a master of that subject. There's no doubt about it. In Scientology, one gets into a situation where his own case, sort of mired a little bit maybe while he's studying, and he's gotten into a lot of deep significances of this and that. A definition goes by, and it doesn't immediately enter his own sphere of experience that he normally hasn't looked at it. He is thinking too hard. He's heard about something called, let's say, an overt act motivator sequence, and he knows he's done a lot of bad things. A lot of bad things were done to him, and this, for his money, is good stuff. Well, actually, that is a formula application of the laws of communication. CE have collapsed, and that gives you immediately the overt act motivator sequence. So he'd know all about overt acts and motivators, and he wouldn't know anything about the laws of communication. Well, it'd leave him baffled. Sooner or later, he would solve this problem with regard to overt acts and motivators with himself. He'd get enough off the line so that he'd no longer be fixated on them, and he would think then that the end all of existence, as far as he was concerned, would simply be to process this on a pre-clear. It solved his case, didn't it? And yet he finds somebody who is rather easily exteriorized and processes very well, and he tries to run overt act motivators. It doesn't work. Well, so therefore he might conclude that the science has broken down on him. Something's fallen apart on him. He just doesn't make it work. Actually, his C distance E formula of communication, just as such, would work not only in the form of overt acts and motivators, but on any pre-clearly exteriorized or any place life existed anywhere. As long as we're going to have interpersonal relationships, we're going to have space. When we don't have any more space, we don't have interpersonal relations, we have interpersonal identifications. C is E. We no longer have space between C and E. So when space goes, we get identification. When we get space into a case, we got differentiation. That's all there is to that. Of course, this is overt act motivators. He doesn't dare become E, you see, because he's beat up too many things, people. He doesn't want to be C, because every time he's C, why, it's bad C, bad cause. And he fights being E while he is C, and he fights being C while he is E. And naturally, you're going to get these two things collapsed. So he goes out, and he can get to this kind of a physical condition. A physical condition, not just a mental condition. Whereby he would haul off and hit somebody in a moment of high anger and re-stimulation. So what, he'd hit somebody and would walk away from the fight with a nearly broken jaw, certainly with pain in his own jaw, wondering how come he got hit that hard. And after that, he would sort of have a groggy tendency to accept the goals of the person he hit. What do you got there? You just got the distance missing between C and E. Took out the distance, you get identification. The cause is the effect. Anything the cause does is the effect at the cause point. Anything that's an effect is also at the cause point. And so we've got the distance out of it, and so we get the mechanisms of space itself. All right, that definition of communication, which is A particle or impulse proceeding from a source point across a distance to a receipt point is a communication. A particle or an impulse proceeding from a source point to a receipt point is a communication. Now, we have to say two-way communication when we're talking about a conversation. It isn't necessary to a communication that it go from C across a distance to E and then become another C and then come back to C as a new E. In other words, we didn't have to make a round trip to become a communication. If you doubt that, why go out and get shot sometime when you didn't have a chance or didn't live long enough to shoot the other guy. He sure communicated with you. There's going to be no question about that. A bullet started from where he was and wound up where you were. You may have a feeling that you ought to communicate with him. He's demonstrated to you conclusively that the best way to be caused is to shoot somebody. And so, naturally, you're liable to just turn the thing around, and so we get various types of communication systems, of which a two-way communication system is only one particular kind. A communication, then, has these component parts, has a source point, has a receipt point, there's a distance between the two. When there is no longer a distance between the source point and the receipt point, when the source point is the receipt point, we do not get a communication. Now, this, you might say, is a little bit arbitrary. But as we see these two things approach each other, the source point and the receipt point, we find out that the individual's effort to communicate immediately results upon himself. This individual says, "I hate you," and hates himself. See, we just see that happening. Well, those two points have not yet coincided. Well, the funny part of it is when you get a complete coincidence of these two points, you get a vanishment of both points. It's quite interesting that if you brought these two points all the way together with no space of any kind between them, the whole subject of communication would blow up as far as this subject was concerned. Therefore, you actually could, theoretically, reach out, pick up an engram a fellow was holding, and have him stuff it into himself and have it disappear. And sure enough, it will. You know, it just blows up. It doesn't explode or anything. It just vanishes. That's that. Quite interesting. The fact is, then, that the space has a great deal to do with it, and what we normally call identification is actually only a similarity or some such thing. It's actually a not quite same space. So, as general semantics, in using this word identification was semantically inaccurate. But we use it because it's rather common as a meaning. What we mean when we say identifies, we mean there is too darn little space intervening between the source point and the receipt point. Too little space. We don't mean, then, identified as an absolute. See, we haven't got a complete coincidence of these two things. The second we did get a complete coincidence, it'd all go by the boards. You must keep that in mind in dealing with this, because something else very interesting occurs here. An individual only brings something he wishes to disappear in part way. And then he feels it's too horrible to pull in further. And what's he get? He gets those masses of energy which make up objects such as bodies. These bodies are composed of something and things that were not quite the right thing to bring in. They were either too horrible or too beautiful. The two conditions wherein a thetan will not make something coincide with the exact, quote, space, unquote, that he is in. In other words, that he won't make the points coincide if he considers the point he is bringing in too horrible or too beautiful. He will leave it parked at a slight distance from himself. So we get the condition of the preclear who is in a, quote, theta body, unquote, or we get the fellow who has a mass of energy hanging around the front of his face, and so forth. These are just hangovers of material he has been unwilling to bring all the way in. See, he brought it up just close enough so that he could identify what it was. He thought he had to pull it up to him to identify, and he brought it up that close, and he says, that's too horrible, or that's too beautiful, because if he brought it all the way in, it would simply vanish and therefore be destroyed. Well, if it's too horrible to destroy, it would make him horrible to destroy it, he feels. He doesn't want anything that close to him. And if it's too beautiful, therefore he wants to preserve it in some fashion. And he winds up by preserving both the horrible and the beautiful until they intermix to a sort of a null. And they're sort of a dubious mass of energy which he hasn't brought in. There are actually the mechanics of energy formation, and they're contained exactly in the formula of communication. When you get source point and receipt point exactly coincident, no communication exists. No communication of any kind. Of course, Thetan, not really being space, could remember such a communication. He could remember, he could walk it up again, he could recreate it. But as far as the space energy manifestations of that communication are concerned, as far as its ability to affect him again, these things cease when source point and receipt point are completely coincident. So we get somebody making the half-hearted effort to swallow up the whole bank. And he keeps playing this horrible trick on himself. He brings it in, and then he says it's too horrible, or it's too beautiful, and he doesn't swallow the bank. He doesn't pull it all the way in. He just leaves it sitting there. Now he comes around to you as a preclear, and he's got a big mass of energy around his mouth, around his head. This could be the assumption, or this could be a theta body, or this could be almost anything you care to name, or he cares to name. He might say it's demons, or it's devils, or it's something under the sun that you know not what of. What's the mechanical operation that goes on here? He has just refused to, rather than failed to, he's just refused to bring in things which he started to bring in. See, he's going to make these two points completely coincide. He didn't do it. See? So a little distance is left remaining, and so we get energy deposits. We get the masses, the particles and impulses, the residual spaces, which, of course, go to make up objects. Now, he does this with malice aforethought, too. He brings things in and doesn't quite bring them in gently enough so they don't explode. Brings in 8 anchor points, but don't quite bring them in, you see. 8 more anchor points, doesn't quite bring them in. 8 more and doesn't quite bring them in. 8 more and doesn't. What's he doing? He's building an object. He'll finally wind up with an energy mass there. The funny part of it is he himself is the only one agreed on this energy mass. He'd have to get a lot of other people to agree upon the fact that he was putting an energy mass there for the energy mass to be resultantly visible. Visibility of energy depends upon agreement. You're capable of subjecting that to clinical tests. You can take a number of people and have one of them do this exercise and keep explaining how he's doing it and have these other people so completely sold on the idea. You know, you just have to sell them on the idea that this fellow was really creating some energy and he was going to do it for them and then they would all be able to do it and we'd convince them so as to get an agreement amongst them that this person was creating energy. And what do you know? It's quite visible to the whole lot of them. We have to get that agreement, though, before it becomes visible. In such a way, a preclear could so convince you of his engrams that you could wind up seeing his engrams, whether you wanted to or not. Now, you've probably had that experience, not with your consent or anything else, but you've been the day after you were processing somebody or something like that, you just happen to notice that you've got an engram that looks very much like the engram you processed out of preclear. Quite curious. You agreed to his engram because you processed it out, and then you objected to having such a picture, and it was your agreement with, plus the objection of having, which then brought the thing into visibility. Now, quite otherwise, there is another mechanism involved where you can be the preclear. Now, if you're totally willing and capable of being the preclear, you can see his pictures. That's another one. You just occupied his universe. But again, what was your basic agreement? You agreed to have his viewpoint and your viewpoint almost, but not quite, coincident. So, of course, you've got his same point of view, which is the same visibility. Quite amusing that these two manifestations, one could be so high scale and the other could be so low scale, and they both appear to be the same thing, which you'll find time after time after time that this is the case. We get the compulsive or obsessive, that is the other determinism manifestation, appearing very like the self-determined manifestation. There is a little band down very close to death on the tone scale, which is a mockery band. And in that band, Anything that's in that band is a mockery of anything higher. And you'll occasionally find a preclear who has tremendous ability on this mockery band, apparently. And you may consider that this person is way up at the top of the band. They're not there at all. The giveaway is that their communication system is faulty, compulsive, lags, and so on. They don't behave very rationally, truth told. They go around talking about, reading God's mind, and they would run, for instance, the crucifixion of Christ as an engram that happened to them with great ease. No condemnation of the case. I mean, we just got the difference of tone scale. Now, a person who is cleared can do such things with great ease. He can read minds. But is he really reading a mind? If you ask this person who could really be other people, how about, give me three people now that you wouldn't mind liking. And this person, they're all dogs. Okay? That's ARC condensed. See? The person doesn't want that. Well, he isn't reading minds. He is under a compulsive effect point manifestation when anybody thinks around him. He's about as alive as a telephone receiver. Telepathy exists there. It worries him. He pays a lot of attention to it. He thinks about it. He talks about it. The other fellow doesn't pay much attention to it. It just seems kind of natural to him. He can elect to know what somebody else is thinking about it and then know. But the test is, can he be the other person with great ease and self-determinism? And then the second test, can he unbe this person? Difference between the top and the bottom of the scale. Now, somebody liable to go away after hearing this sort of thing and believe that anybody who exteriorizes and so forth may be just step-sixing or something, you know. He might be doing something very wrong or merely because he has some ability along the line. Well, there isn't any slightest doubt about the ability. If you apply any corner of the ARC triangle to any case as a test, and you will discover that the individual is compulsive or obsessive when he's low on the scale, and he's very self-determined about it, high on the scale. He can like anybody. He can agree or disagree at will. And he can be anything, and he can be anywhere, high on the scale. And low on the scale, he's either compulsively liking everybody, he's compulsively being everybody. He couldn't possibly unbe somebody at will after he became them. He may give some manifestation of exteriorization, but he will only exteriorize into his own universe. In other words, it's... And his manifestations are very peculiar, and they're not orderly, and he's not in control of them. The difference between these two levels, the individual at the bottom of the scale is not self-determined. The individual at the top of the scale is self-determined. An individual can place himself wherever he wants to at the top of the scale and can't place himself any place at the bottom of the scale. It's made human behavior quite incomprehensible because it actually made the tone scale into an apparent circle. And being an apparent circle, it appeared that when you knew everything, you would then know nothing. And it made everything very paradoxical. When you studied and studied and denied yourself and dedicated yourself to kindness and charity and good works and everything else, you went out the bottom. And they start upscale from there, and they just get crueler and crueler, so people could say, well, the finest state that you could possibly be in is be entirely cruel. It said that if you were able to be every place and know everything, why, then you would actually just merge with some very great body of life, which was sort of a nirvana, and there you would float forever. That's bottom scale nirvana. No, as you go up the scale, you just become more and more of an individual and more able to be any other kind of an individual, too. But it's all self-determined. The whole problem of life in its efforts to solve life are stated in this mockery band of the tone scale, so let's not you, as an auditor, make the same blunder and pick up people who are very low on the tone scale and say, oh, they're very high, they're very serene, and so forth. And people who are actually in good shape, you say, well, they're just low and telepathic and all messed up and so forth because But they're really high on the tone scale, and I don't like to be like that. Let's not you confuse these two ends of the tone scale. As I say, the test, once more, is again communication. Is the communication well-controlled, rational, thorough, conclusive? If it is, guy's upscale. If the communication lags, I mean outflow or inflow lags are great. When the individual stumbles occasionally, when the individual doesn't really make sense when they talk, and when they really are telepathic, but they kind of don't like people, only they kind of have to, you'll find them tripping on viewpoint straight wire. They'll trip all over the place on viewpoint straight wire. They just won't be able to cover it up, that's all. They'll just fall flat on their faces. They'll go anatent, so forth. Second, you start to run viewpoint straight wire. They get large energy masses start moving around in front of their faces when you just ask them to spot a place where they're not. You say, now, spot New York. Well, I got a picture of New York. No, let's not worry about the picture of New York. Let's spot New York. And all of a sudden, whir, wham, wham, zoom, zoom. They've got energy masses running around all in front of their faces. You know, big energy movements and so on. Well, that's the test of your case. It's downscale. You actually cannot possibly confuse these two. But what do you know? One instructor recently managed to get so confused about this that he told every step one he had in his unit that they were actually computing psychotics. Obviously must be computing psychotics. Because after all, he was sensible, he was a good solid step five, he was rational and reasonable, and these other people who could exteriorize were obviously just faking. So he invented the phrase called a white five, or exteriorizing psychotic. The people he was training were perfectly understandable. They communicated well. They were very reasonable people. They were pleasant to have around. They liked people. They liked to do things and so forth. This fellow just deleted all that as observation, and they could exteriorize and he couldn't, so they were all psychotics. So it can happen. But let's go back to this basic definition of communication and observe this in action. Now, the preclear has to be able to be at C and has to be able to be at E. He has to be able to be cause. He has to be able to be effect. If he's unwilling to be effect, and if he's unwilling to be cause, he's somewhere between them, which sort of loses him, since he's lost the only two reference points there are in a communication line. There are two orientation points on a communication line. One is the source point, which we call C, and the other is the receipt point, which we call E. And those are orientation points on a communication line. And when an individual doesn't have either one of them, he's to that degree lost. And he is lost to that degree that he doesn't have either one of these. And that's about all there is to being lost, whether you feel lost mentally or geographically. An individual who gets lost geographically with great ease is having trouble staying on or near the E or C point. Now, here are your points of reference then, not only just in communication, but in the process of travel and process of moving around, of locating things, of losing keys and pocketbooks and cars and all that. It's just the positiveness with which a person can be at C and know it, and at E and know it. He can be at E and know it. Well, he would be in good shape. If he can be at C and know it, he'd be in good shape. If he can be at both C and E at will and know it, then, boy, he's in wonderful shape. See, he can selectively be at these two points. Well, where does this guy go that gets lost in the limbo of the in-between? Well, he just can't quite bring a C all the way in. He can't quite bring an E all the way in because he hasn't got a C to bring anything into and he hasn't got an E to bring anything into, so how can he bring anything anywhere? Now, he's the first person to start wool gathering on the subject of where is cause or prior cause or why. He's the first person that'll start really, really fumbling around with this. Who created this universe? See? Oh, it's prior cause. Something happened before this happened, which is the cause of what just happened, but there is a cause behind that, which caused that cause to happen, and there is a cause behind that. He's just, what is he doing? He's just deserting C points. He can't mentally You know, as a being, he can't hold down, nail down, and know he is at any C point without shoving off of it. And so he just starts going back into the past the second he drifts onto a C. Or he starts drifting off onto other objects. You would get this individual into a vast discussion. Joe gets shot by Bill. Well, now the question comes up. Which and what is the C point? What was the cause of Joe's being shot? Well, the first one that you would pick up would be, of course, the bullet. Sure enough, it had a C and it had an E. Let's pick up the powder, C and an E. Let's pick up the cap. It ignited the powder, didn't it? So therefore, the cap is obviously cause. No, really, it was the gun, barrel, and hammer. It's the gun itself, really. No, it's the trigger. The trigger got pulled, and that fired the shot, so the trigger is really C. Well, no, I'm thinking it over. Actually, it was the whole gun and the bullet and the powder. That really would be what C is. He tries to spread out here a little bit. Oh, and he says, what about the man that pulled the trigger? Obviously, it was Bill that shot Joe, so therefore Bill was the cause of the killing. No, but that doesn't hold either, because that morning before he went out hunting, his wife raised the devil with him and so forth, and she was very, very upset, and she got him so nervous that he didn't quite know which direction he was shooting, and so his wife was the cause of the shooting. Oh, no, wait a minute now. His wife was up all night long with a sick baby, so actually the baby shot Joe. Reason might be said to be a self-determined or other determined unwillingness to hold down any particular C point. Reason itself starts to progress out along the line the second you start deserting C and E points in favor of other ones. And you get reason. And people naturally assume in Scientology that if I'm being reasonable, I must be deserting points. Naturally follows anybody who's being reasonable is deserting points, they think. But they maybe don't take into effect that you can self-determinedly desert points and then regain them again. I mean, you can move off of these points and onto them again, and that in itself makes logic and conversation possible. Well, where is the source point here on this C to E line? We had the bullet in Joe's head and Joe dead. So we want that C point. It's up to us police officers to find out what did do this. Well, naturally, we simply, as police officers, have to get something we can punish. Overt act motivator sequence, we'd have to get something we can communicate. Well, we can talk to Bill, so we'll execute him. Well, that's the simplest way to go about it. There must be some volition here someplace, so obviously it was Bill's volition. And he just tried, and that's simple. But that's illegal. That's legal consideration of what the cause point was. Now, an armorer would have an entirely different consideration. He'd examine the gun, and he'd find out that it had a hair trigger, and quite in addition to that, that a leaf had gotten caught in the mechanism which caused the gun to release without being triggered. Well, he's an armorer, so he just selects out the gun kind of naturally. He says that's the cause of the accident. It was an accident, then. Well, any way you want to go about, I suppose the guy interested in bullets would be interested in that bullet being cause of it, and he would get very didactic and explain why. Each one of these fellows, though, is what? He's fixed on a certain selection of cause. See, he's got his attention fixed. The police have their attention fixed on something because they're there to police human beings. So if they're there to police human beings, they'll fix their attention on the first human being near the cause point. The armorer, being fixed upon weapons, won't even look at the human being. He'll find the cause as being the weapon. And the person who'd be interested in bullets would be looking at the bullet. Of course, we get down to this then. This is what becomes nebulous about communication, but really isn't nebulous at all. It is consideration alone which chooses the C point and the E point. Consideration alone, because it's a postulate that brings them into existence in the first place. So people's arguments in life are actually around this: which is the E point, which is the C point, what is the distance? Oh, they talk about it, talk about it, and talk about it. prime source of argument, because it's the prime level of communication. Two people communicate long enough, they will talk about the parts of communication, of course. And so in processing, we find the preclear constantly and continually deserting the C points and deserting all the E points. And we process him today, and we find he's absolutely sure that his father's at fault. And tomorrow he's moved off of that point, even though you don't think you processed it out. And now it's his mother. And if you didn't process him at all and were to let him go until the following day, you would find out that it was his brother. And if you didn't process him at all and you ask him on the next day, you would find out that it was actually his sister. He's just going to move off of these C points, that's all, and off of these E points. He would tell you 3 or 4 weeks later, if you happened to ask him rather quickly, that actually the person they were meanest to was not himself. They were really meanest to his brother. He's even moved off the E point. He's selected and changed his C points. And this is peculiar to a level of case which can still have some choice of selection. They just dramatize. They use their choice of selection to move off C's and E's. You, as an auditor, could fool with a case forever like this. He'd be making up his mind every 15 minutes that he was on some other C point, that something else was the cause of existence. And the next thing he'll do is start to select out of his existence several things to elect as cause. There's a process you can run on this, just like any of these things got processes behind them. You can apply any kind of a process to a definition. You could say, look around the room and just select several things as causes for all of your troubles. It's quite interesting, because that's what he's doing all the time. He's looking around the environment, selecting out causes for his disabilities. Just tell him to do it. You'll not perhaps achieve the super ultimate with regard to case results, because it's artificial. It's not processing parallel with truth, because it isn't true that the environment is causing him his difficulties. And so you'd be running a process which is not parallel to truth, and you shouldn't do that. All right, now, if we've got communication in question here, let's take up affinity. And let's find out that the basis of affinity is actually degree of duplication. Every communication is as accurate as it is duplicated. It is as perfect as it is duplicated. A complete communication would be a complete duplication at E of what was sent at C. The complete duplication. We say, how are you? And the fellow receives, how are you? When people start to avoid the C points and the E points, you get into this kind of a silly situation. The fellow says, how are you? He's at C now, you see. He wants to know how the other fellow is. So he says, how are you? He makes a communication. It goes through, but it doesn't go all the way through. It doesn't complete. Because the other person is not at E. He doesn't want to be the effect of that. So he considers that the other fellow has said, to hell with you. He can't receive the complete effect of how are you. He receives something else. He steps sideways. He's off course. He's avoiding, you might say, the receipt of this question, how are you, and he won't duplicate it. So he receives, to hell with you. And actually, if you go around and ask some people who have been greeted, right after they've been greeted, they will give you at least that the person meant something else than those words. They will give you a much wider significance on it than just that line, how are you? They'll say, well, he actually didn't care how I was at all. All he was being was polite. He actually asked that in a very snide tone of voice. He probably knew where I was last night. He could get more interpretations on this. Well, the distance you get from the E, that is to say, when the person is being addressed, and when he is at a distance from the point which is being addressed, he has to add a lot of interpretations along the line. It's just like you'd put a lot of buffers or shock plates or protection shields between you and something else. Somebody comes along, they say to Joe, how are you? Well, now this comes to some kind of an E point, but it comes on through to Joe as filtered through this shield this shield, this shield, this shield. Every one of these shields asks the question, is that a safe communication to receive? 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 And every time it comes through these lines, it's altering to some slight degree. There we get association. Stimulus, response, association. An individual's anxiety to protect himself winds up in a change of all things coming in at E. Now, take A, take affinity of the triangle, and you find out that that is the test of the degree of duplication. That's all. Is it a complete duplication? Is it a duplication in terms of its energy? Is it a duplication in terms of its idea? Is it a duplication in terms of this or that? The A puts a consideration on the duplication. Perfect A would just be a perfect duplication. So he asks the fellow how he is. He receives, how are you? That's all. And now let's lower the willingness to duplicate. We immediately have to get some sort of energy mass in there to protect and shunt and change it around and so on. And so the degree of affinity depends upon the willingness or unwillingness of the individual to duplicate. Somebody says, I love you, to somebody who is incapable of love. This person then can't duplicate. See, they just... Love? Well, what is this stuff, love? Well, I'll agree with it. Now, I'll agree with it, you see, but there's no affinity along that line. And we move over into agree and disagree. The statement, I love you, is then unreal for this person. They can duplicate the words, I love you, but these words are... No, you just can't really tell about love and qualification, 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 qualification. And with the time you get this, what is the real degree of agreement there? Well, agreement is, again, a type of duplication, but agree or disagree is the action of receipt or reject. Agree is the receipt or reject of the communication, which of course would include his bypasses and filters and all the rest of it. Whether the communication is actually accepted or rejected, which is the action corner of the triangle. Reality is the action corner. That thing upon which a person cannot act is very unreal. Say, I love you. You know, the words might come through, but there's no duplication on the other end of it because there is no real receipt point there. It's unreal. Now, to have a communication system, you have to have a complete duplication on the line. It isn't really necessary that it be agreed with, you understand? It isn't necessary that any action take place of any kind whatsoever, but a willingness to take action must exist, which is, again, a consideration. And after we've reduced all this down, we find out that it's consideration, which elects the C point and elects the E point. It's consideration of whether or not the communication is dangerous or safe, or one is dangerous to it, that elects the A point. The action taken on it is elected over here on the subject of agreement or disagreement, which is reality. And again, that's a consideration. So we've got 3 points of the triangle, and each one of them is monitored by a postulate, and it's that postulate which considers the situation. Break it all down to a consideration. The test of this is, will energy alter when you alter the consideration with regard to the energy? Yes, it will. Energy will alter when you change the consideration of that energy. Test, delete from the pre-clear's postulates his consideration that he is heavy and has a lot of gravity. Weigh him. That's all you have to do. Put him on a scale. His weight will have changed. Now, we pack him full of these considerations He says he's considering he's putting in Glaxies into himself, and they're very heavy and so forth, and we put him on the scale, and we find out he's gotten heavier. Consideration, the Thetan is unable to move the body and do a handling of the body exercise as long as this person believes implicitly in the heaviness of the body. But we just change this consideration of gravity, and we find out the individual can move the body around quite nicely. As a matter of fact, we could make an athlete out of somebody who was very clumsy simply by changing his consideration of gravity. This is not a difficult thing to see here, but it rather violates the fact that everything looks so darn real, and believe me, it is real. There's no question about the reality of mist and reality of universes and that sort of thing. They're real. But the test of it is the consideration. A, do we consider that people are good? Do we consider that we can get along with people, whether they're good or bad? That's a higher consideration. Do we consider that we have to agree or that we shouldn't agree? Or that we can agree or not agree? What is our consideration of that? That is the A corner. And it's consideration. I consider that he is source, or I consider that he is effect, actually is the monitor of that consideration. And we get all the way around the thing, and we find out that we're basically stemming out of ideas. Therefore, change the person's ideas about A, about R, and about C, and you have changed several things. Basically, you've changed his ability to consider. You've changed his understanding, because A, R, C altogether combine into understanding. And you have certainly changed his spatial relationships, because any time you process C, you're going to change space one direction or the other. And you have also changed his ability to locate himself, because he is where he considers he is, and if he's unable to consider that he is anywhere, he isn't anywhere. This sounds like double talk to some degree, but the test is it work on a preclear? Uh-huh. You said it works on a preclear. Now, an individual who is trying to remember something is trying to become the effect of something which has occurred in the past. If this individual's unwilling to be an effect point, he, of course, can't remember it. He won't be able to remember those things of which he's unwilling to be an effect. But this reverses after a while, and he compulsively begins to stand on the effect point of everything he doesn't want to remember. He gets an inversion. Inversion exists merely because it's part of the agreement of the physical universe that what you want, you can't have. That which you have, you don't want. That which you agree with will disagree with you. That's the way the universe is set up. There wouldn't be any randomity in it unless it ran backwards. It must run in an unexpected direction, otherwise it'd bore you to death. When we get the preclear who's way down scale about all this, boy, does it appear to be completely hopeless. Oh, he's trapped. He's in a mess. He's miserable. He wants to be happy, but he knows he can't be. He finds himself packed into a mass of energy, which he's unwilling to bring all the way in. He's bogged down. He's inactive. He's unwilling to move things around. What does all this add up to? He is on the small triangle end of the line on the tone scale. Now, this triangle could be considered infinitely large as far as the distance interposing between C and E is concerned, or infinitely small, which would be the bottom of the scale. Well, it would be hard, solid matter if it were infinitely small. The ARC triangle could actually become hard, solid matter. And if an individual made all of these particles disappear by pulling them all the way in, it would suddenly cease to exist as a triangle at all, and the individual would float free if he pulled everything all the way in. They normally don't do that. They just pile that up right close to them and just don't pull it in totally. So you get this hard mass manifestation with regard to preclears. The preclear is as big in terms of his ability to embrace the universe as he is high on the tone scale. How much distance can he tolerate? Well, it gives you also how much communication he can tolerate. How much could he be cause of? Well, that would also give you how much distance he could tolerate. What's he willing to be the effect of? That would also give you how much distance he could tolerate and what he's willing to be cause of. In other words, you can play this thing any way you want to, round and round, any kind of straight wire questions, any type of process that is a process, can take these component parts and do something with them. Now, you can ask him, who could you like? Who wouldn't you mind liking? Who wouldn't you mind disliking? Who would it be all right for you to dislike? This really stops somebody who's way down scale, who's on a compulsive got to love everybody. He works fine until you ask him, well, no, who can you dislike? Communication lags, spong! Other than that, he looked like he was doing all right. Well, he finds out somebody he can dislike, and he's at liberty to dislike this one and at liberty to dislike that one, and he finally searches around, and he finds more and more people, and on a gradient scale, well, if he wanted to, he'd be perfectly able to just hate everybody in the whole universe to pieces, but he doesn't happen to. He could. His capability of hating everybody is there. Capability of loving everybody is there. He can take them or leave them. And you have, every time you found somebody new he could dislike, increased his distance. Increased the amount of space he could have. You have at the same time increased his ability to communicate. You've increased his reality, which has brought his awareness up. And you have also increased his ability to be cause and what he can experience in life. Just person after person, people it would be all right for him to dislike. People it would be all right for him to like. People would be all right for him to dislike. Give me some more people it would be all right for you to dislike. Some more people would be all right for you to like. So forth. You could just hammer and pound away on this. You'd be enlarging the whole subject of communication with the case, because a communication duplication system depends upon that affinity. That is a wonderful test, by the way, on a Brinkler. He'll compulsively start to tolerate everything. He'll have heard some scrap of Scientology or heard you say something about it, and he will think, well, the goal is to be able to tolerate each and every viewpoint of the physical universe. All right, well, if that's the way out, I'll tolerate it. I'll tolerate it. Uh-huh. Yeah, I'll get up tone scale. I'll tolerate it. I'll love everybody. It's obviously what that phrase means. Tolerate everybody, love everybody, same thing. The heck it is. Tolerate any viewpoint. Remember, there are viewpoints in this universe which just hate things to pieces, so you better tolerate that viewpoint, too. You get, now, this is just a little bit different than what you might suspect. Well, now we go over on to agreement and disagreement. Give me some living being that it'd be all right for you to agree with. Oh, you get somebody who's hanging around 1 or 1.5 or 2, something like that. And by golly, it's just nothing for them to sit there for 10 or 15 minutes trying to find some living thing they can agree with. Trees? No. Finally, they find a pet toy dog that they have seen on the walk. Well, it'd be all right to agree with that. You say a living thing. So on. Well, actually, they're capable of agreeing with objects. They are no longer capable of agreeing with living things. Your method of licking it, of course, would, if you wanted to do a fast job on it for the pre-clears, just switch over and ask them what objects they're perfectly willing to agree with. The first person would announce, in the first few answers he gave you, one of the things which he was compulsively being. He naturally could agree with anything he's compulsively being. If he's being a railroad locomotive, he'll tell you, I could agree with the railroad locomotives. The deep significance of this is that it's just exactly what he said, Q&A. Now, this individual could agree with a stove. He could agree with this, he could agree with that. Heavy objects, you'll find out he's probably compulsively being, or could be, with great ease, one of these objects, compulsively, on other determinism. All right. Well, he may get along all right. We may ask him, now give me some things that you could agree with. Maybe this person is at 0.5 or 0.2 or somewhere on the tone scale like that. And agree with, oh, yes, I agree with my mother and agree with my father and agree with all of my teachers and all the objects in the room and the trees. Aren't the trees wonderful and aren't they all beautiful? Okay, now give me something that you could disagree with. 2-hour communication lag. Can't disagree with anything. Gone. Fog. Upset. So forth. Well, you get anybody that you spring this process on that isn't exteriorized and doing fine is going to develop a slight communication lag. The process is startling enough in its impact on the mind to produce a communication lag almost always on the first few questions along that line which are asked. If a person is actually free to dislike, free to like, free to agree with, free to disagree with, free to be the effect of, free to be the cause of any viewpoint in this whole universe, he's free. He also isn't in this universe anymore. What's the definition of clear? I just gave it to you. Free to agree and disagree with, free to like and dislike, free to communicate with, to be the effect of, and to cause any cause, effect, object, or viewpoint in this universe. That would be operating Thetan plus about, 80 or 90 tone levels above. Because it sounds so vast, it isn't necessarily true that it takes forever to process this. It isn't necessarily true, but it's not necessarily a short process either. You get a lot of people that will just turn on a machine and say they can do it, but then they don't exteriorize, and they don't do this, and they don't do that, and they get energy manifestations and so forth, and they'll just give you a bunch of crosstalk about the whole thing. You slide them onto an e-meter, something like that, and that e-meter suddenly starts sitting up and yapping. You know, this is a case who's just doing a terrific avoid, as far as you're concerned. And he's just patching in everything he can possibly patch in, and so forth. This case is operating on such a low level of certainty. Now get this, because certainty has not vanished from our ken. He's operating on such a low level of certainty that he has no comparison with any other certainty to know what certainty is. And that's a tough spot for a guy to be in. Certainty is not a dichotomy. Certainty happens to be a unity. A fellow is certain of something. Now, he is not as certain of something as he is certain of something else, you see. He doesn't make this comparison. He is either certain of something or he isn't certain of something. It's an open and shut proposition. And, therefore, we get into this kind of a situation with preclears. We'll sometimes find a highly glib preclear who yet has no great certainty. You're auditing a machine. It's as easy as that. You're auditing a machine. Now, this person is being the machine. And you would trip across this the second you ask him what he was willing to be. You'd fall over this one. You'd find out that this or that. Now, somewhere on the case, there must be something then that this individual really could become certain of. Certainly, there's something he could be certain of, isn't there? Somewhere. Well, if an individual is terribly glib, two straight-wire questions, and yet at the same time you just say, well, he says he could love everything, and he could hate everything, and he's just in beautiful condition, and he can make everything and do everything, and so, and yet he doesn't exteriorize, and he can't move around, and he got to do a body lifting exercise, or any one of these things, there's something wrong here. Well, that's what's wrong. His level of certainty has no comparative level of certainty, so he just tells you on a computational basis, bing, 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 bing. What's the test? It's just whether or not he actually can perform in terms of this and that. You look at this case, you have to use opening procedure on the case and give the case a complete certainty in terms of opening procedure, which we will take up later. But that's what you have to do to a case that's glib. You have to establish certainty with the case. And in any case, no matter what you're doing, you certainly better establish certainty first, because if you don't, maybe the whole of 25 hours of auditing just goes up the spout with no action.